He literally went from a henchman of PLO terrorist Yasser Arafat to a devoted follower of Jesus and lover of Israel, too.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, we are going to have a jam-packed, blessed show today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, with your Jewish-related questions, 866-348-7884. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be joined by a former PLO terrorist, Muslim henchman for Yasser Arafat, now follower of Jesus, who loves the Jewish people, the people he once hated and wanted to kill. Nellos, we're going to hear from him at the bottom of the hour. Going to take some of your Jewish-related calls. You know the parameters on a Thursday. It's got to tie in somewhere, somehow, with something Jewish, Hebrew, something that relates there. We'll be taking your calls. But come on, it's election week. Everything is still in disarray. Is there an attempt to steal the election from President Trump? Have prophetic voices said he will be reelected? What is in the world is going on? We'll focus on the Jewish question, the Jewish part of it today. I want to first play a clip for you from the ambassador to Israel under President Barack Obama. Now, from President Obama's viewpoint, his administration was strongly pro-Israel and friends with Israel. From the Israeli viewpoint, his administration was terrible for Israel. The relationship between Obama and Netanyahu was very chilly. Openly, widely known, there are strong claims that the Obama administration worked in Israel to undermine Netanyahu's reelection bid during the time when Obama was in office. Joe Biden himself has never been accused of being an enemy of Israel, but of course he was vice president during the Barack Obama time. So what do we make of that? Let's listen to what this former ambassador, again, this is someone who worked, Jewish man who worked under Barack Obama, so who'd be very positive towards the Obama administration's relationship to Israel. Let's see what he had to say.
Now, given the scenario you just described, some of the numbers we're seeing, there could be quite a few people in Israel a little apprehensive at a Biden presidency, especially in the Israeli government. What is your message to them tonight when it looks like that's a real possibility?
Well, the first thing to say to any friend of the United States, and Israel obviously is a very close friend of the United States, is we're in the middle of our democratic process. It does take time. It is being handled very effectively and professionally by the relevant officials in the relevant states. And as soon as it is clear what the outcome is, then it will be possible to begin working with whichever incoming or continuing administration we have. And so it's best for all friends of the United States to allow that process to unfold and take time until the outcome is clear. As I had said throughout the campaign, Joe Biden has a lifelong record of friendship and commitment to Israel and its security and the U.S.-Israel partnership and standing up for Israel's right to defend itself and its legitimacy anywhere it's challenged. He was a major partner in the Obama-Biden administration, providing assistance for Iron Dome, for the F-35, for our $38 billion military assistance agreement. He will be a strong and close friend of Israel and a partner in expanding its relations to more Arab states, in continuing to try to keep a two-state solution with Palestinians alive and viable, to work toward it, in preventing Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. So I have great confidence that if indeed there's a Biden administration, that the relationship between the United States and Israel will continue to be a very, very strong and close one.
Well, that's certainly a positive assessment. Again, someone that would be in the Biden camp, the Obama camp, and would have that perspective. I read another article saying, okay, if Biden's president, it could be worse. In other words, Biden does not have a history of anti-Semitism or siding with Islamic radicals or things like that. And therefore, Yeah, it wouldn't be so bad. Trump has been really good for Israel, but wouldn't be so bad for Israel. However, what if it's Kamala Harris? What if it's Kamala Harris? What if she is the one who will soon be president of the United States, which is certainly a reasonable possibility. Now, it could be, again, God hasn't spoken to me about the outcome of the election, so I cannot speak from the viewpoint of the Lord showed me. So I'm sitting here the same as you are, trying to evaluate everything. In fact, tonight at 8 o'clock on Facebook, God willing, tonight, 8 o'clock on my Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, ASKDR Brown, I'm going to talk about how we assess these prophetic words saying he will have four more years. Even one prophetic word from where the brother said, hey, a year ago, he knew that there was going to be a contested election that would end up being decided by the Supreme Court that would drag on for a while. Now that's happened, he said, yeah, I've been expecting this the whole time. He's very relaxed about it. It's like, yeah, I've been expecting this the whole time. And Trump will be reelected. How do we sort that out? How do we analyze that? We'll do that tonight at 8 o'clock on the S. Dr. Brown Facebook page. But because God has not given me insight as to what's going to happen in any supernatural way, I'm sorting through things the same way you are, trying to analyze what's out there, what's being said, what's accurate, what's not, and saying, God, your will be done. You know what's best. Your will be done. Your will be done. But just looking at things in the natural, it's very possible that Joe Biden will be the next president. And he could be president for 8 years and still be strong, healthy and mentally strong at 85. Right now, there seems to be an excellent possibility that he is deteriorating mentally in terms of strength and endurance, and that there could be a Kamala Harris. How would Israel feel about that? So there's an article in Yeshiva World. So this is a religious Jewish publication, Yeshiva World, and it says this: Kamala Harris, Biden will restore aid to Palestinians in Gaza, reopen PLO office in U.S. Now, that's her speaking about what Joe Biden would do. But that's bad news. That is bad news. You say, no, we want to give aid to the Palestinians, not when the aid is used to support terror. In other words, President Trump said to Mahmoud Abbas, we know that you are using money that we give you to pay the salaries of imprisoned Palestinian terrorists, so to support their families while they're in prison. And we know that you are paying the families of martyrs. If someone, a suicide bomber, blows himself up and kills Israeli children in a playground, if he did something horrific like that, then the family would get supplemented financially in his absence. So it's not only a good move for him spiritually, he thinks he's going to go to be, you know, in paradise and be with the 70 virgins and all of this, you know, and having perpetual sex and feasting, whatever he wants to do forever and ever and ever in the Islamic paradise for men. No, it's not just that, but his family will be well provided for by the government. I've talked to Palestinians who do not like Israel, who do not trust Israel, who think that Israel is treating them unfairly, who think that Israel is like an evil giant, but they despise the Palestinian leadership. I'm talking about pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel, anti-Zionist Palestinians who have told me our leadership is totally corrupt. They're getting rich and we don't get anything. Well, Trump said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to fund you if you fund terrorists. Mahmoud Abbas basically said, then take a walk. We don't need your money. So it's not a matter of aid going to the people. Of course you want to help the man on the street. Of course you want to help the average Palestinian. Of course you want to strive for a situation where they have equality with their Jewish neighbors. Yes, that's the goal. That should be everybody's goal. Every player in working for the Middle East, regardless of your perspective, that should be the goal, that there's equality for those living there and that the Palestinians can be liberated to a life of freedom and self-determination. And what they have to give up is any attempt to wipe out Israel, and terrorism has to be off the board, period. So that's bad news. That's a bad news policy, just to put it out there. But what if it's Kamala Harris? Everything I understand, her ideology is more radical than that of Joe Biden. How would that play out for Israel? Now, either way, none of these things are the end of the world. You hear what I'm saying? None of this is the end of the world, however it plays out. But the consequences are serious, all right? The very serious consequences for people on the ground. Okay. How about this? Trump hit new highs with his Jewish vote. According to this article in World Israel News, I want to read some of this to you. Trump hit new highs with Jewish vote. Jewish News Services says, according to a Republican Jewish Coalition poll, Biden's share of the Jewish vote was the lowest for any Democratic presidential candidate since 1988, while Trump's was the highest since the same election. So Trump picked up black votes, Hispanic votes, and Jewish votes in substantial numbers. The question is, what did he lose then to be so far behind in the popular vote? Where did Biden gain? That's a big demographic question. U.S. President Donald Trump received the highest percentage of the Jewish vote for Republican in decades, while former Vice President Joe Biden hit a new low for a Democratic candidate in recent years, according to a poll released on Wednesday. Trump received 30.5% of the Jewish vote, while Biden got 60.6%, according to a Republican Jewish coalition conducted by so-and-so. Okay, it goes on to say, according to the RJC poll, Biden's share of the Jewish vote was the lowest for any Democratic presidential candidate since 1988, while Trump's was the highest since that same election. In that election, former Republican George H.W. Bush won 35% of the Jewish vote, while the Democrat nominee Michael Dukakis won 64%. In 2016, Trump received 24% of the Jewish vote, 6 percentage points lower than what presidential candidate Mitt Romney got in 2012. Top pollster Frank Lenz, no, sorry, wrong. This is a little headline I misread there as part of the article. Meanwhile, 78% of Republican Jews voted for Trump, 86% of Jewish Democrats voted for Biden, and 41% of Jewish independents voted for Biden, while 38% went for Trump. Now look at this. Some 70% and 19% of Orthodox Jews, so the most religious, and their ideology would be closest in terms of family values and scriptural values to that of evangelical Jews or Christian conservatives, evangelical Jews, evangelical Christians or other Christian conservatives. So Orthodox Jews sharing many similar values to us. Some 70% of them supported Biden and only 19% Trump. Respectively, 57% and 36% of conservative Jews supported Biden versus Trump. So conservative are not conservative ideologically. It's part of Judaism, conserving Jewish tradition, but they're more liberal. And then the most liberal, the Reform, 80% Biden, 13% Trump. So basically mirror image, flip side, one side or the other of the coin. The more religious the Jew, the more likely to vote for Trump. The more liberal the Jew, the more likely to vote for Biden. That's one poll. Other polls did not show Trump getting that much of the vote, but definitely more than he had in more than previous Republican candidates in years. Very interesting.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Again, bottom of the hour. Just a few minutes from now, going to be joined by a former Palestinian terrorist. And look, your average person on the ground, Palestinian, Israeli, wants to live life, live freely, make family choices, educational choices, job choices, have the right to self-determination and autonomy in those ways. That's what your average person wants. Now, if you're raised in Gaza, the conditions there are worse. Israel massively making concessions and just giving Gaza over to the Palestinians. It was great upheaval involved, great national trauma for the Israelis to do it. Literally, the army going in there and pulling out their own people who worked there for decades and built their vineyards and beautiful synagogues and their businesses. And now they're pulled out of there just living in tents in Israel until they get reestablished and things like that. And what happens? The Palestinians elect Hamas as their leadership, so now there has to be branded terrorist and basically shut down. They're building tunnels under Israel to kill and destroy. They're smuggling weapons in with tunnels under Egypt and so on. And Israel has to crack down. You grow up there, and the propaganda you're getting from Hamas-run TV and things like that. There's going to be more hostility towards the Jews. But your average person that realizes, okay, you've got some ancient battles here and some ideological religious conflicts, but come on, let's work it, especially the younger generation. People want to do that. People want to do that. And just noticed a post on our Facebook page from Terrence: I've eaten in Palestinian-run restaurants with nothing but positive experiences. I understand there are those who may throw rocks just haven't experienced anything but positive. You're going to have haters on all sides. You're going to have Israelis doing bad things and Palestinians doing bad things. But your average person wants to work together and live side by side in harmony as to statehood. And, you know, those are the big thorny questions. But in terms of, nobody wants an ongoing battle, war, wall. That's a fact. That's a fact in terms of the bulk of your average person in Israel or in so-called West Bank or Gaza. All right. one more world item that I want to encourage you with the word. How's that? I don't know if you followed the terrorist attack in Vienna, in Austria. A Yeshiva World News reporting on that. Vienna terror. 4 dead in Islamist attack, Jews locked in homes, manhunt still underway. This is from last night. So a couple days back in Austria, a terrorist attack. The government recognized it as a terrorist attack, but initially didn't say anything about Muslims. You're thinking, okay, hang on. You have an attack next to a synagogue. You have Jews being attacked. You have one of the attackers allegedly blowing himself up. You have another allegedly saying Allah. I think you brand that an Islamic terrorist attack or a radical Islam attack. You don't just say it's a terrorist attack. You describe the nature of it, right? Is it not self-evident that that's what we were dealing with? But, you know, Vienna, Austria, Austria's the birthplace of Adolf Hitler. Things like this happening in Europe are especially difficult for Jews. Too many memories of when Jews were slaughtered wholesale with the cooperation of the populace of country after country. So obviously Jews are going to be exceptionally sensitive. And one European Jewish leader said, look, we need to know what's happening in the mosques. We need to know what they're teaching. It sounds like an intrusion, but there's a lot of radicalization taking place. An incitement to violence. Israel knows what's being taught. Lots of you watch the sermons. You say, hey, they've got it recorded somehow, or they're picking up a feed, or they got information. It's you don't want to be intrusive on the one hand. On the other hand, radical elements need to be exposed. It's a fine line to walk. Difficult question, but you can pray for the Jewish community of Vienna. All right, let me encourage you in the midst of one of the most chaotic moments in American history, and a moment that could well get more chaotic. And guys, let me know if there are any breaking news items regarding the vote count or anything like that, any of the states. But this could well go on for weeks or months. This could well be something that ends up, the election I'm talking about, in the courts. It could well be something that, whatever the result, there's going to be violent protest. I mean, just think on the one hand, if Trump supporters are convinced that the election is being stolen right from under their eyes, okay? They're convinced of that. And it actually happens. And they believe the man that was lawfully voted to be president is being robbed of his presidency by dishonest political thugs, and the courts do nothing to fix that. You think, and I'm hoping that whatever happens, God will cause peace to prevail. But you think that the most committed and radical Trump supporters will just sit back and say, hey, that's the way it went. Conversely, let's say not only is Joe Biden win the popular vote, which has happened already by a few million votes, but let's say he wins the electoral vote by 20, 30 votes. So let's just say a number of states that are still being counted go his way, okay? But the courts ultimately overturn it. It goes to the Supreme Court. There's been fraud. It's been exposed. Trump is the actual winner. Do you think the radical anti-Trump people are just going to take that line down and they're not going to be all kinds of protests? And again, I hope that somehow there's a peaceful solution to what happens. But we're in tumultuous times that could get much, much more tumultuous. Hear me. We could look back to today, November 5th, 2020, and say, yeah, it was so peaceful then. Scary, huh? So let me encourage you with Psalm 46. Psalm 46. Let's go through it together. So it is for the leader of the Korahites on Alamot, whatever that means, some tune. Elohim lanu machseva oz. God is our refuge and strength. Ezra bitzarot, a help in trouble. Nim sama oz, very near, literally, exceedingly found. And I've been through Psalm 46 with you before, but we're going through it again. Al kein lo nira behamir aretz uvemot harim belev yamim. Therefore, we're not afraid, though the earth reels, the mountains topple into the sea. That's worse than protesters marching down your streets. This is serious. The earth reeling, mountains toppling into the sea. Yehamu yechmeru me'mav yir ashi harim begavato selah. Its waters rage and foam. In its swell, mountains quake. Selah. Nahor plagav yisamchu ir Elohim kadosh mishkenei elyon. Now this picture of beauty and order. There's a river whose streams gladden God's city, the holy dwelling place of the Most High. Oh, just think about that. God is in its midst, will not be toppled. By daybreak, God will come to its aid. Nations rage, kingdoms topple. At the sound of his thunder, the earth dissolves. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our haven, Selah. And it says, come and let's look at the works of the Lord, how he has wrought desolation on the earth. He puts a stop to wars throughout the earth, breaking the bow, snapping the spear, consigning wagons to the flames. Desist. Realize that I am God. I dominate the nations. I dominate the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our haven. Selah Adonai tzvaot imanu, misgav lanu Elohei Yaakov. The Lord of hosts is with us. God of Jacob is our haven, is our safe refuge. So friends, you might want to read that psalm daily, speak it out loud for comfort, for reminder that God is God and that there's a place of refuge in him in the midst of storm, in the midst of chaos and craziness. Remember when Jesus prayed for his apostles in John 17:15, and by extension, I believe this prayer applies to us. He said, I do not pray, Father, that you take them out of the world. I do not pray you take them out of the world, but that you keep them safe from the evil one. So in this world, which is going to be messed up until the Lord returns, the goal is not to be taken out. The goal is to be kept safe in the midst of what we go about doing our Father's work. Okay, Jeremy, I'm going to answer your question on the air without bringing you on in Shelby, Montana. What concordance do you recommend for Hebrew studies? If you're talking about biblical Hebrew, if you're able to get software, get yourself Accordance Bible software. It's the simplest thing to use, and it's for PC or Mac. The simplest thing to use in terms of a good scholarly academic program for Hebrew, Greek that you can build on according to your level, but using it in a concordance form is very easy. Almost all the Bible software, you can do that today. Hebrew Greek Bible software. Of course, you have Logos, you can do that. But Accordance, very easy to work with. If you want a physical book, the Concordance of Evan Shoshan, which I used for many, many years, Evan Shoshan, it looks like Even, E-V-E-N, Evan Shoshan, his Hebrew Concordance, it's all in Hebrew, so it's Hebrew. But that would be the best biblical one. Got it many, many years ago, used it for many years, and now just use almost exclusively the software programs that I have. All right, we'll be back with our special guest. Stay right here. Shake the nation.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Beautiful Hasidic harmony. The one who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. This is Michael Brown on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. How interesting to have that music introduce my guest. And I am super eager to hear his story with you. I was in D.C. September 25th, 26th for the return event with Jonathan Cahn and others. I saw a brother, a former Muslim terrorist, talking to him. And he introduced me to his colleague, another former Muslim terrorist, Tasir Abu Saada. We'll call him Tas, and found out that he worked for Yasser Arafat, and he's got a couple of books. One was called Once an Arafat Man, The True Story of How a PLO Sniper Found a New Life, and the other, The Mind of Terror. A former Muslim sniper explores what motivates ISIS and other extremist groups and how best to respond. And those books, the name that's used for the author there is Tas Saada, S-A-A-D-A. Tas, what a joy to have you on the air with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this very much, and I thought, I know it's election week, but let's do this, and let's do it on Thursday, on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. What could be more fitting? So tell us about your background. Where did you grow up? How did you grow up? How did you form your ideology?
My family are originally from the city of Jaffa in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
We used to call it Palestine.
Yeah.
And my family immigrated from there to Gaza shortly before 1948 war, and they ran away from home basically, and they were stuck in the Gaza Strip, and that's where I was born, 1951.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 months after my birth, my family immigrated to Saudi Arabia. So I grew up in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and then in Qatar.
You were in a Muslim family. Were you a religious Muslim?
Yeah, the family was. I was born a Muslim. I've been to Mecca 10 times in my life.
10 times.
But really, when I came to America, I wasn't practicing Muslim.
Got it. All right, so Tas, what did you think of Israel and the Jewish people growing up? What did your family think? How were you raised?
Well, growing up, I hated Israel and the Jews, and believed that they are the ones that took my land and caused us to be immigrants and refugees. And so, and it's not something that my family or my people taught me that. It's just growing up in Saudi Arabia as a homeless, as an immigrant and refugee, you begin to really get so angry because the Saudis and the Qataris always called us Palestinian immigrants and refugees. You sold your land to the Jews and you came to our country, take our country in. So they were telling us that, daily in our life. So that made me very angry. And when I had the chance, I joined Yasser Arafat forces at the age of 16 and a half. My dad didn't want me to. And so I ran away and joined Arafat's forces.
All right, so at the age of 16, so you not only hated the Jews, but you're in a situation now where there was hostility from the surrounding Muslim nations. The Palestinians weren't welcome, so you were treated as second-class citizens then. How did you look at Yasser Arafat? What kind of figure was he to you?
Well, for me, he was my hero. My father supported the Arafat Fatah movement and a lot of finance, a lot of money. And so when Arafat came to Qatar, they would visit my my dad, and he'll come to my house, he'll come to our house. And I used to sit right next to him, and I was mesmerized by him. He was so charismatic and so interesting stories that he shared with us. And so when I had a chance to join to fight for my land, I naturally chose him and his movement to join Fatah. Yeah.
And did you feel that this was not just a patriotic thing to do, but a spiritual thing to do as well?
Spiritually speaking, you know, we didn't fight because of Islam or any Islamic ideology. We fought for a homeland, and so it wasn't really a spiritual, Islamic spiritual thing. It wasn't we never called ourselves jihadists or something like that.
Got it. All right, but it was that drive for patriotism, and it's pretty fresh because your parents grew up a certain place, Jaffa. And now because of the war, independence, they're kicked out. So that's obviously the fault of the Jews. That's the good way you look at it. The surrounding Muslim nations don't want you. So you only got one place to go back. That's to your free the homeland, right?
Yeah. So I wouldn't be called homeless anymore, immigrant and refugee.
And friends, visit the website hopeforishmael.org. Hopeforishmael.org. Well, obviously, this is a part of your past that you've left behind as a follower of Jesus, but what were you doing? What were your activities? How did you become a sniper?
That anger and hatred just consumed me. And so I was fighting anyone that caused us angry, caused us homeless, like the Jordanians. I hated the Jordanians because we believed they were agents to Israel. The Saudis called us immigrants and refugees. Israel, of course, caused us to be homeless. So my anger was reflecting in the battlefield. I shown to have a lot of skills and fighting, and we were very well trained. We had trainers from North Vietnam, from North Koreans, the Irish Brigade, and I became very good with the sniper rifle. It was interesting to me. It looked different than the typical AK-47 that we normally use. And so I got interested in it, and a Vietnamese trainer decided to train me on that, and I did very good at it. So I was used as a sniper. I was a sniper in the Battle Al Karama, if you've heard of it or if you remember that battle. The Israelis came across the Jordan River into the village of Al Karama, because they got tired of us coming across and attacking them and running back into Jordan. So they came to finish us. And it was a bloody battle, but we believe we won the battle, because the Israelis called for a ceasefire by mid-afternoon in that battle. We lost a lot more numbers than the Israelis did, but still caused them a lot of casualties. So I was a sniper at that time in the hills, and Yasser Arafat was right in the cave right above my cave, and so I was waiting for the Israelis to come in, and then my job is to take out Israeli commanding officers as they enter into the village of Al Karama.
Mm. So real life and death situations, and here you are fighting, thinking you're doing the right thing. What kind of man was Yasser Arafat?
As I said, he was a charismatic. He was a leader that loved his people, and his people, I loved him personally. He gave his life for the cause of the Palestinian people that they believed it was their land. And so I looked at him as a hero. Mm. And naturally, when I gave my heart to Jesus about 26 years ago, I started looking back at all of that and realizing how wrong I was.
Mm. But it's important that folks understand that perspective, right? That they understand how someone like Arafat can gather people around him, how he can be looked at as a hero willing to sacrifice for his people, whereas we here in the West just looked at him as a terrorist. And this helps you understand groups like ISIS and these other fanatical groups and what makes them tick. Again, the two books, check these out, Tas Saada, Once an Arafat Man, the True Story of a PLO Sniper, How He Found a New Life, and The Mind of Terror, a former Muslim sniper explores what motivates ISIS and other extremist groups and how best to respond. Again, the website hopeforishmael.org. All right, we've got a minute before the break. Let's start here. What started to turn your heart to follow Jesus? We'll start, and then we'll pick up on the other side of the break.
Yeah. As I shared, I think I shared with you, I came to America right after I decided I could not do the job as an assassin. I was an assassin for, where is this alarm?
Tell you what, stay right there. We got a break coming up. You can sort out whatever alarm is going off. So, friends, this is real life. This is real life. An assassin, a sniper, for Yasser Arafat, his job to kill Israeli commanding officers in certain battles, now a devoted follower of Jesus and a lover of the Jewish people. We were so thrilled to meet me as a Jewish follower of Jesus and him as a former PLO terrorist, and to take a picture together. What a joy to have this man as my brother. Jesus is the Savior, friends. He really changes lives. He really does.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
How great is our God. Friends, join me in Israel. End of February to the first week and a half, almost of March. We still have room. We still have room because we had to reschedule from May of this year to October. Now to March 2021, it'll be the trip of a lifetime. Go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage. Sign up, bring your family along. It'll be an extraordinary time. Not if you have like 11 kids under two, you know, it might be a little challenging, but join us and you'll be blessed. And we may have some nights of Hebrew worship with songs just like that as well. All right, I'm speaking to Tasir Abu Saada, his pen name, if you read his books, Tas Saada, and telling us how came to America because he could no longer be an assassin for Yasser Arafat. So, come over to America. What happens next, sir?
Well, Dr. Brown, when I did about six or seven operations, and the last one was really convicting. It was in pain. And so I went to Arafat and said to him, I cannot do that anymore. And he advised me, he said, young man, you are a natural born leader. What you should do is go and get yourself education, and maybe you can fight for our cause with your brain instead of your weapon. So I didn't waste any time. I started studying French. I was going to go to France. But I came to America that was in 1974, to visit a friend of mine in Columbia, Missouri, and then I go to France. I came to America, and I was surprised that the American people liked me, and they treated me very kindly and accepted me when I thought Americans hated us, Palestinians. So that's when I decided I wanted to stay in America. So I asked my friends what would be the best way to stay in America. They said to marry an American girl. I said, okay, that's no problem. So I went hunting for an American girl, and I found her. My wife, who I thought I'll marry for 2 to 3 years and then get my papers in America and say goodbye. But here we are, 47 years later. We're still married. Praise the Lord.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing. Because he have a better plan, you know.
Yes.
When I married Karen, my father was very mad at me. Why, you know, even though he knew I married Karen because I just wanted to stay in America. But he thought that was not right to do. And I was engaged to my cousin, too, at the time. So he decided he was not going to fund me anymore, and I was stuck. So I found a job working as a dishwasher at a French restaurant in Kansas City. And did a good job. The owners, a French couple, really liked me. And his wife thought I should learn how to serve in the dining room after I learned how to cook with the chef in the kitchen. And so I came to the dining room, and that was totally different experience for me. And I was so nervous. I went to my first customer to take his dirty dishes away. I was so nervous, my hands were shaking. The man sitting there by the name of Charlie, he noticed I was nervous. So he looked at me with such a beautiful smile, and he said, "Thank you, young man." I was shocked. This rich man, I knew he had to be rich to eat in that restaurant. It was a very exclusive place. And so that touched my heart. I made a decision. I'm going to take good care of this man if he comes again. Found out that he was a regular customer. And so I've always, I started to, you know, look after him every time he comes. And that started a relationship. Charlie treated me so kindly with respect and acceptance. And that intrigued me. And that began a relationship for 19 years. I grew in that restaurant so fast. Within 2 years, I was studying business management and international marketing. In 2 years' time, the owners, they liked me so much, they asked me if I would manage the restaurant for them. So I did, even though I spoke very little English. But I spoke some French, so that helped. Anyway, so 19 years, we kept this relationship with Charlie. Charlie just treated me so kindly and lovingly and treated me like a son, which is unusual for us Middle Easterns.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I left the restaurant and I started working in the hotel industry, and I took courses with Cornell University for hotel and restaurant management. And become very well known and very in demand, and moved to California and worked with Western Hotels over in Los Angeles, Century City area. And then 19 years, the owners called me and asked me if I would buy the restaurant from them. Of course, that was my baby. So I went back to buy the restaurant. But I wanted to move it out of the place, the building that it was in. It was a rental property, a very exclusive area. I don't know if you know Kansas City area. The area called the Country Club Plaza. But I wanted to move that out of that area, just outside of it. And my customers all love me, and they followed me. And believe it or not, most of my customers were Jews.
Interesting.
Yeah, they were mostly Jews and very affluent people in the area. They loved me. They treated me so kindly, but I hated their guts. I never showed them that, of course, because they were spending a lot of money. But in my heart, I resented them so much. And as I was buying the restaurant, Charlie, of course, is excited for me, and he was trying to help me find the right location. He came to me in mid-February of 1993. He's excited to tell me about a building that I should go to look at. It happened to have gone to the same building just three days before. An old building used to be a funeral home that went out of business. And a real estate agent told me about it. I went to look at it with the chef. And when I walked in there, I felt so uncomfortable, and I felt like there's demons and ghosts in the place. I ran out of there. So when Charlie said that to me, I said, Charlie, I went to the same building just 3 days ago. And man, when I walked in, I felt creeps all over the place, demons and ghosts, and I ran out of there. He laughed at me, and for the first time in 19 years, he brings up the subject of God. Never said to me anything about God.
Seriously? Wow.
No, never. Not one time, if I remember correctly. And he said, Tost, you know why you were scared like that? I said, no, why? He said, because you don't have the fear of God in you. I said, Charlie, what are you talking about? I'm a Muslim. I fear God. He said, no, you don't. But not to worry. He said, I can help you with that. I can fix it. And he pointed his finger to the sky, and he said, I have connection. I laughed at him, and I walked away. Dr. Brown, that word connection just took my mind over. I could not sleep. I could not think. I could not. I wasn't able to function. 3 weeks went by, and then I keep calling Charlie to tell me what this connection is, and he would say, you're not quite ready yet. Until I got to that point where I cannot function anymore. So he came and picked me up, took me to his house to tell me about his connection. On the way to his house, he's sharing with me about miracles in his life and praise the Lord and hallelujah. And I said, what is wrong with him? He never talked like that before. We got to the house, he's opening the door, and he's still talking to me. And he said, Tost, to have the peace that I have, you must love a Jew. I froze, literally. If you had a chance to read my book, The Once an Arafat Man, at that time, Charlie knew everything. I shared, I loved him so much, I trusted him so much.
And actually, I apologize, but you just got a whole lot of people to go get your book because, friends, this is how Tost comes to the Lord, that this Christian man has known him for almost 20 years and finally feels it's time to witness and knows his whole, never said anything to him, knowing his whole history. He now tells him, in order to have what I have, the peace, the joy, in order to have this relationship with God, you have to love a Jew, Jesus Yeshua. That's how he comes to faith. So again, we're out of time. I'm sitting here on the edge of my seat listening too. Go to hopeforishmael.org to find out about what Tost is doing and how to reach Muslims with the gospel. And then get his book, Once an Arafat Man, Tost Saada. That's Saada, my brother. We'll have to talk more in the future. Talk about ISIS, this other ideologies. Get the rest of your story. But friends, read the book. God bless you. I look forward to talking with you further as we strive together to see Jew, Muslim, the world come to know Jesus, the Jew. God bless you.